And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the 1 year anniversary episode of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello! I'm still Sasha Kaplan. And it is a very special episode because we, first of all, like Michael said, this is our 1 year anniversary, which is like ridiculous that we've been doing this for a year now. And we're up to like -735 listeners. Like, that's amazing. Thank you so much to our -75 listeners. You are few, but proud. We are, I think it's kind of funny that we're starting with Infinity War, considering the launch point of the podcast was actually you and I talking about Endgame.
Well, no. So we talked about Endgame on The Experience.
The Experience, yeah.
So, but 1 year ago to this very day, okay, very day. We're recording on the 17th, but the episode is releasing on the 18th. But on this very day of release, June 18th, was when the series debut of Nerdy Notions came out, where we tackled the good, the bad, and the ugly on a bunch of television series that you had been watching lately.
Oh my God, yeah.
And still not over
Veronica Mars season 4, people. It's still painful.
And ironically, the episode is also titled "The TV Shows You Love, Miss, and Wish Would Die." So,
yep. But,
and then, like, you know, we did the next episode was about San Diego Comic-Con because it was just perfect timing. Then we did an episode on the great, awesome, legendary Mel Brooks. And then we kind of started going into the MCU. Took a break because hockey season happened, and then
I was moving.
Yeah, so things were in the way anyways, and then we came back and we've been doing the MCU ever since. So it's kind of been a good ride, and it would have been cooler if we would have been doing Spider-Man Far From Home as our 1 year, because that way it's like, hey, it's the 1 year and then we're ending MCU now. That way, that would have been really cool, but obviously timing.
I still think it's funny it's Infinity War, because yeah. You know, we're happy and now we're not about to be.
Yeah, so it's like, now it's time to get serious.
So it is time to get serious. So let us jump into the ridiculousness and epicness that is Infinity War. But funny enough, I have two lists. So compared to my regular notes, I also have a things that should have been addressed in Endgame list. This is important to talk about in Infinity War as opposed to Endgame, because there's like elements that are set up in Infinity War that should have carried over into Endgame, but did not, and I'm still mad. So we'll get to this. Don't worry. We start on a dark night. Actually, no, I take that back. We start with really dark and depressing music, and we actually see we hear the voice of Kenan Branagh, the guy who directed the first Thor movie. So fun little throwback there. And he's saying that basically that this is a distress signal. This is the the ASS, the Asgardian ship, and they are under attack. So after the events of Ragnarok, we know that all of Asgard is now on the ship and they're probably heading to Norway. But they don't get to Norway because they are besieged by Thanos and his children. We see a few dead Asgardians and there's this like Squidward-esque guy who is like narrating that the death, they become children of Thanos because, you know, I really care what I become in death. Thor is not looking good. Looks like he got his butt whooped. We see Loki. Thanos talks about his destiny and he has the gauntlet and he also has the Power Stone. Way back in Guardians of the Galaxy number 1, we know that the Power Stone was given to the Nova Corps on Xandar. So this means that Xandar went boom. There is no more Xandar. Sorry if anybody cared about Xandar.
I was really hoping to see Glenn Close and John C. Reilly again.
Okay, then seeing them again would have been cool. That would have been nice. But anyway, like, there's only so much you can put in a movie when you already have to balance such a large cast, which we'll talk about later. But This is like a really like depressing beginning. We see like Heimdall's on the ground somewhere. Obviously Thanos wants the Tesseract. And he has Thor captured. He's like, I will give you back Thor if you give me the Tesseract. And Thor's like, the Tesseract was destroyed on Asgard. And Loki's like, about that.
Loki sucks. Note the sarcasm to my comment of Loki sucks.
There is no sarcasm here. Loki sucks. So here's the thing. When this movie came out, and I think this needs to be talked about, everybody was like, oh, this is all Wanda's fault, blah, 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 blah. No! There's a whole bunch of other people that are in line before her. One of them is Loki, because if Loki didn't let into his darker impulses and left the stone on Asgard, it would have been destroyed with everything else potentially. Or it would have not been destroyed and made it more difficult to find by Thanos. So fudge you, Loki, fudge you.
So, all right, number one, let's write this down. Hold on. Let me get my legal pad.
This is the shit list of people that could have prevented all of this from happening. Number one, Loki of Asgard.
All right, I got Loki written down.
All right, so Loki won't give the stone. Thanos tortures Thor with the Power Stone. So we do see that Loki cares about Thor. So Loki says the sun will shine on us again. And then Loki says something like, we have a Hulk. Which is a nod back to the Avengers line that Tony uses, like when Loki says, oh, I have an army. And he says, well, we have a Hulk. And so Hulk tries to kind of attack Thanos and kind of gets thrashed. Thanos's children are largely forgettable. Thanos kicks Hulk's butt and Thor can't really do anything because he's still trapped. Heimdall calls on the All Fathers to give him a little bit of black magic and they give him the power of the Bifrost and he makes Hulk go poof. Or technically Hulk goes on a wee ride all the way home.
He gets to ride the Bifrost.
Wee all the way home.
although it's not really wee. For Hulk, because Hulk is kind of unconscious a little bit. He got his butt whooped.
That's a Hulk problem. That's not a Sasha problem. So Thanos gets the Tesseract, and he now has two stones out of the six. And he sends Squidward and some of the other kids to Earth to get the two stones. So we know there are two stones on Earth. The Time Stone and the Mind Stone. The Time Stone is with Doctor Strange, and the Mind Stone is Vision. Okay. So Loki does, to his credit, tries to pledge his undying loyalty to Thanos again, and we have confirmation again that Loki was sent by Thanos, like, oh, get me the stone, and, like, I find it really, so I guess the question is, did Thanos gave Loki the staff, which had the Mind Stone, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, did Thanos know that it has the Mind Stone? And he gave it to Loki to use, and then he just, like, got pissed that Loki lost it on Earth?
I would think that would probably be it right there.
That would make sense.
But the thing is, though, is that also at the same time, I don't think nobody really knew that the Mind Stone was in the scepter until Age of Ultron.
This is true, but the question isn't what we know. The question is, did Thanos know? I'm also not sure how Thanos knew that the Tesseract was on Asgard, because again, Loki got the Tesseract on Earth. Unless Thanos has spies everywhere. I don't know.
I'm just gonna go with the assumption that Thanos has spies everywhere.
All right, fine. I mean, his children are psychotic and everywhere, so you know, whatever. So Loki tries to buddy with Thanos, like, oh, I'll be your guide, but then he tries to kill Thanos, and then honestly, I will say this, Loki was never my favorite character, but watching Thanos literally choke the life out of him was a little sad to see. I still don't like Loki, but that was a little sad.
And there were no resurrections for him either.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So there's no sign of, so we see like the dead as guardians, we see Heimdall there. Also Heimdall gets killed after he sends Hulk home. E.T. said going home.
Hulk phone but, home.
But we don't see the two annoying ones.
Quark and
Ragnarok.
Meek.
Yeah. or Valkyrie, and their significant lack of dead children. So they were sent somewhere else, which is good. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in Endgame.
Yeah, we got to wait three episodes to talk about it.
So there's no resurrection this time, as Michael Thanos points out, and he destroys the ship, leaving Thor basically alone to die in space.
And destroys the and blows it up, too.
It starts breaking apart.
Well, he used the Power Stone to pretty much destroy the ship.
Yep. So meanwhile, Hulk lands on Earth in New York City, but he doesn't just like crash somewhere like in Avengers. He actually like falls straight through into the Sanctum Sanctorum. But he, of course, is as Banner. But what's really funny is before that, we actually see Doctor Strange and Wong talking about how they have no money.
Wong has no money.
Well, neither one of them do. Really. But it's funny because Wong's like, oh, I have 100 rupees. And he's like, oh, well, how much is that in dollars? And Wong is like, oh, a buck and a half.
I'll see about getting you a metaphysical tuna sandwich.
Right? So Hulk/Banner lands at the Sanctorum. And he says, Thanos is coming. And Dr. Strange's like, who the heck is Thanos? So then we see Tony Pepper in the park. And, oh, my God. I hate this scene so much for so many reasons. Basically, Tony is talking about this like prophetic dream he thinks he had where they have a kid and they name him after like Pepper's eccentric uncle named Morgan, and I'm just like, kill me now. I'm a purist in some sense of the word. Like, Tony doesn't have children in the MCU or in the Marvel universe, in the comics really, except maybe that one time, but like everybody forgets that. So like, it's unnecessary and it's frustrating, and Pepper's kind of annoying now. So they talk about, so they're still engaged, and Tony is hoping Pepper's pregnant. She's not. Spoiler alert, she's not pregnant yet. So Dr. Strange arrives with the little sling ring, and he's like, he tells Tony that he's needed, and Tony's like, do you do parties? And then Banner comes out, and they hug, and Tony's really happy to see him. And so we get
No, he wasn't happy to see him. He was confused.
But still pleased to see him.
Yeah, because it's like Banner had been missing for like 2-3 years at this point. Well, 2 years at the point of Thor Ragnarok. Technically it could still be 2 years at that point.
We'll say because, like 2.5-ish.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, 3 years could be because it was after Age of Ultron, but there's a gap between Age of Ultron and Civil War, so.
Well, not only that, but also that it was, when Thor ran into Banner on Sakaar, he told Banner that it had been 2 years. So.
Right.
And who knows how long the events of Ragnarok actually took place. So you're looking at maybe it could have been about 2.5-3 years at this point now, by the time we get to Infinity War.
So Tony goes with Strange and Banner, and they end up in the Sanctorum, and Wong gives like a backstory of the Infinity Stones, just in case anybody's forgotten. So forged at the birth of the universe.
The first movie you watched just happened to be Infinity War.
Yeah, seriously. So basic story, there's 6 Infinity Stones, they have magic powers. I'm yawning for some reason. And
the story of the Infinity Stones is boring. Yeah. Just admit it. You know, it's boring.
That's why I'm yawning. Each one has its own job, so there's confirmation that Thanos was behind Loki and the attack on New York, in case anybody forgot about the invasion of New York. And Tony's, like, leaning, because Tony Stark is a self-centered dick still, so he's, like, leaning on this, like, giant, like, cauldron historical shenanigan thing, and the cape just slaps him. I love the cloak. It is the best character in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. Fight me. And he just like slaps Tony. Tony's kind of a jerk, and it's kind of funny because when you and I did the Doctor Strange review, we talked a little bit about the parallels between Doctor Strange and Tony Stark. And this to me really shows off the difference between, because Tony was humbled by what happened to him, but he didn't directly change his personality. He just like toned it down. Whereas with Stephen Strange, it's like a completely like, he hit rock bottom and he had to climb up himself, and that changed him for the better. And so I think at the point where, I think the Russo brothers talked about this interaction. They said something about how they wanted Doctor Strange to be the adult in the room, which is really funny if you think about it. So let's see. So this is where things get interesting. We know that they need help. So it's like, okay, well, we got to call Steve. Like, we need the Vision. It's like, oh, well, the Vision is missing. He's somewhere. He turned off his transponder 2 weeks ago and he's disappeared. And he's like, well, call somebody. Like, where's Steve? And who can find Vision? Steve Rogers can, but Steve and Tony are not on speaking terms. And like, but this is like the fate of the universe. And Tony's basically like, there's a lot I need to catch you up on. So obviously the elements of the Civil War are still they're still being felt. We're not ignoring what happened in Civil War at all. And we'll see a few more hearkenings back to it.
And not only that, but one of the greatest lines that came out of this was like, Tony tells Banner, it's like, yeah, we kind of broke up. It's like, and Banner's like, broke up?
You like the Beatles?
it's like the funny thing is, like, obviously we'll get that reference, but there's probably a whole audience that just goes, who's the Beatles?
Oh my God, I hope not. So they're about to call Steve from a little flip phone, but there's like a rumbling and there's something happening outside. There's people screaming, things are flying, and there's a giant spaceship, because of course there is. Meanwhile, Peter Parker is on the way down a school field trip across the Brooklyn Bridge when he sees a scary spaceship. So Ned offers a distraction, and his distraction is basically, oh my God, we're gonna die, it's another invasion. And Peter runs out. And there's Stan Lee driving a school bus.
It's going, you kids act like you've never seen a spaceship before.
And like, granted, these kids were probably like elementary-ish school level, if not like middle school level, when the first invasion of New York happened, but they're in Queens. So like, they weren't that affected by it. So Strange does some magic to contain the damage to kind of kill the switch of the spaceship from all the debris, which was kind of cool. There's two aliens that emerge. This is where Tony describes one of them as Squidward, which was really funny. And the two aliens, of course, and Squidward, of course, says that everyone's about to die at the hand of Thanos' children. And Tony says, get lost, Squidward, which is really funny. Hulk doesn't want to come out. This is something that's very important. There's a moment where they're all like standing, Wong, Strange, Tony. And Tony's like, time for the other guy. And Banner's like, I'm trying. And it just doesn't happen.
And another great line, it's like, dude, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards.
So Hulk is...
Hulk is shell-shocked. He's shell-shocked.
Hulk is acting like a little whiny little bitch because somebody bigger than him kicked his butt and he's cranky about it.
Well, the funny thing is that I wouldn't really just say that, because like technically speaking in Ragnarok, and you can also say in the first Avengers film, technically Thor beat Hulk in those fights. But he didn't. But the thing is, though, is that when you look at the Thor-Hulk fights, they're more even contests. When you go up against, when Hulk went up against Thanos, and he's got two Infinity Stones at this point, one of which is the Power Stone, it's almost like an unfair fight, and he got his ass handed to him handedly. So,
he did get his ass handed to him, but I still stand by my statement.
But there's a little bit more post-traumatic stress disorder on the fight that Thanos did with Thor.
Fine. So Tony has his like runner's outfit and he has like the new chest plate. It like opens up into a really slick looking new suit. I think this is like my favorite suit out of all of them. Like, it's very slick. It does really cool stuff with the nanotech. So like, I like it. And Banner kind of gets sent to the park. So Tony and Strange also like do not get along. I think I mentioned that already, but it bears repeating. They do not get along. And there's like, so we have a Squidward guy and kind of like a Hulkish guy. And the Squidward guy has like telepathy powers. And so he just like throws stuff at people. And Peter shows up to help. And he goes, a guy from space who wants to, so he's like, he asks Tony, like, what's the deal? Who is this guy? And he's like, guy from space who wants to steal a necklace from a wizard. And this is like the most, like, this is how a kid would describe the events of Infinity War. So like, this guy wants to steal a necklace from a wizard so he can like save the world or destroy the world or whatever. Like, that's the kid version.
And it's the best way to say it to Peter Parker.
Peter is not a child. Like, yes, he's a child, but he's not a child. Like,
But for this type of instance, this is the best way to put it to Parker. Parker just gets there. The fight is ongoing. You need to get right into the action right away. Simplify it the best way you can. And that's what Tony did.
Yeah, all right. So Strange and Wong make a pretty good team. It seems like they've kind of like, they match each other's fighting style. Squidward is stronger and Strange secures the time stone, but he gets captured. And Clokey, like, uses, like, the cloak is just awesome. I'm gonna keep gushing about the cloak. But he gets kind of pinned with wires to this, like, piece of stone, but Clokey gets him out, but he still gets captured. So Tony goes after Doctor Strange. This is cool. So, let's see. Clokey gets pulled up. Peter tries to stop Squidward and save Strange, but he gets end up pulling in through the beam to the spaceship, and Tony goes after them. Hulkish guy gets defeated by Wong, and it's spectacular because he like opens a sling ring to the space to like I'm guessing like the Himalayas or something where it's just like snow, and he tries to get back through the portal and his arm gets cut off. Like, that was awesome. So as Peter's in space, his suit is incapable for that. So Tony just like sends him a nanotech upgrade because he just has one in his back pocket. And we will talk about that upgrade in a second. Peter falls, but he gets saved and he just like gets sent home. But Peter does not get sent home because it's Peter. Pepper calls Tony and she's like, oh God, you're on a spaceship. Please don't be on the spaceship. Like, lady, the man is a superhero. Like, I'm so sorry he didn't retire and sing Kumbaya with you. But, like, there's literally about to be a ginormous alien invasion. What do you want him to do? Just, like, ignore it? Like, I understand Pepper's attitude in Iron Man 3 because Tony was becoming obsessed with the suits. But this, to me, seems unnecessary. But whatever. So, we lose Friday and we lose contact with Pepper. Let's see. Flip phones are indestructible. It was probably a Nokia. So Bruce ends up being the one to call Steve. Space, the final frontier. This is the journey of the spaceship nerd, starring the Guardians of the Galaxy. The Guardians are responding to a distress call, but when they get there, there's just like nothing other than like a very attractive looking white guy that's like still alive somehow. Also, Groot. Let us talk about Team Groot. Team Groot has some attitude problems. But it's kind of funny. Also, like, I think they've all learned to understand him, which is kind of funny. So we'll get to that in a second as well. So let's see, they find the Asgardian ship, they fight on the windshield, and it's kind of funny them freaking out seeing Thor on the windshield. He's alive because he is a man. He is a godlike man. Thor apparently is like a mix of a pirate and an angel had a baby, which is, I think it's just the eye patch, honestly, but fine. Mantis wakes him up. He fills them in on what happened. Thor kind of bonds with Gamora over their shared family drama. Quill tries to, like, measure up to a god. Peter, you will not measure up to a god. Just, like, just don't even try.
Your daddy might have been a planet, but you cannot stand up to that god. Oh, and real quick, I just want to throw something out there, too, for the listeners. Squidward, his real actual name is Ebony Maw. The big brute with the that axe type weapon is Corvus Glaive. Call Obsidian is the one that also works with Proxima Midnight.
Right,
which is obviously which is Proxima Midnight's the lone female.
We'll get there.
So I just want, so that way, as we talk about these characters moving forward, you at least know when we say Squidward, it's Ebony Maw. Sorry, I had to put the clarification in there.
I'm pretty sure nobody knows that name and everybody just remembers Squidward, but okay. So Thor is going to take a pod and because he needs a new hammer. So he's going to go to the dwarves to get a new hammer. Thanos is apparently going to nowhere. Another hearkening back to the Guardians of the Galaxy and to the second Thor movie, because the Reality Stone was given to the Collector. So Rocket does not want to go to nowhere. So he and
Groot
to go with Thor. So nowhere is, they also, there's this conversation of like, oh, Thor's like, what, why do you think Thanos is going to go to nowhere? Like, that's stupid, la, la, la. And it's like, no, this is actually the best place for him to go to. It's the closest. And that's where the Reality Stone is. So Thor is going to go to Nidavellir, something like that. And the rabbit is going to go with him. So let's talk about Rocket's nicknames. He is a raccoon. He is a trash panda. He's a puppy. Now he's a rabbit. What's he going to be next? A cat? Well, so that'll probably be a joke in Captain Marvel 2. So Thor goes, let's see. So we kind of leave the Guardians and we go back to Earth. We actually go to Edinburgh, where we see a dude in a window. And it's actually Vision in like a human skin suit where it looks like a projection. And of course, she shockingly looks like Paul Bettany. Like, oh my gosh.
Really? Paul Bettany? I would never have figured that.
Who else could it be?
He's only been the voice of Jarvis forever.
I really love the Vision. I think he's a fun character. I think he's a wasted potential a little bit in the sense that like there's a lot they could have done with him, but we'll get to that. So Vision is feeling something's not right with the headpiece, with the Soul Stone. It's like warning him of danger, and Wanda tries to look, but she can't really see anything other than like what she perceives as to be just Vision. In case y'all didn't know, but between the events of Civil War and Infinity War, Wanda and Vision got together. This is important when we get to WandaVision.
And whenever that finally comes out.
It's as far as official channel suggests, it's still being released on time, so we'll see.
I still think they're going to push it back so that way it comes out in around a little before Doctor Strange 2.
Well, they haven't made any announcements yet. In fact, I think they did confirm that it's going to be released on time, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see because... Anyway. Yeah.
So, Vision doesn't want to leave because apparently they've been stealing these cute little moments over the past 2 years, and they're actually kind of adorable. Fight me. But Wanda still says that, like, they have made promises and that, like, they have responsibilities. And Vision's like, I kind of want to just stay with you and I don't really care. And it's actually very sweet. But then, so we see that they see, like, a New York attacked and that Tony's missing. And the stone that Vision is wearing kind of, like, starts up again. Our Vision is worrying about it, and Tony's missing, and Vision should go, and Wanda says no, and then he gets stabbed through by a spear,
by Cull Obsidian.
That guy. And Proxima Midnight is there. Her name, for some reason, is the only one I actually remember. Do not ask me why. So, I really like the fight scenes here because it's very obvious. I think they do a really good job of showing that, like, Wanda isn't fighting to her full potential because she's worried about Vision. So, her priority is not to be offensive. Her priority is to protect Vision. So, her fighting style is a little bit different from what we will see later on. And then we get to this train station. And there's something weird in between the trains and everybody just kind of stops to look. And they like Proxima throws a spear or something at it, and it's Steve Rogers, and it's Falcon, and it's Natasha, and they're there to save the day. So Proxima leaves, but her boyfriend dies, or gets damaged, or gets hurt.
He dies. He was the first of the four to die.
Yeah. So Vision is damaged, and they take him home. Where could home be? But we don't have time for home, because we have a flashback to go to. We go to Gamora's home planet, and we see that Gamora is separated from her parents, and Thanos kind of sees her because she's like fights off a guard and like punches him until he leaves her alone, and she's like, I want to find my mom. And he sees like the spirit in her, and he gives her this cute little dagger, and it's like perfectly balanced, blah, 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 blah. And we'll give Thanos props for this. He does make her look away and make sure she doesn't see the fact that he's destroying, like murdering people. I'll give him points for trying to protect this child's innocence for like two more seconds. So back on the ship, we see that Gamora's holding this very beautifully designed dagger. And she tells Quill to kill her so that Thanos doesn't get this some piece of information that she has. And Peter swears he'll do it. I'm sure. So they arrive in nowhere. Almost said Norway. It's not nowhere. It's not Norway. It's nowhere.
We'll get the Norway in Endgame.
Thanos is speaking to T'Vaan, who claims he doesn't have the stone, yada, yada, yada. Long story short, this is all an illusion. It's all because Thanos has already decimated nowhere, and he has the reality stone. So this is just a fake reality to lure Gamora, I guess. So Quill says that they need to get the stone first and then deal with Thanos, and Gamora's just like, nope, we're going to attack Thanos. And she actually stabs him, but of course, reality stone.
Yep.
T'Vaan claps, and it's all revealed. Like, it's really cool how it like just like pans away, and it's just like everything's on fire. Thanos laments, and Gamora doesn't care, and Thanos takes Gamora, and he manages to, like, stop Drax and Mantis in, like, very, like, reality-bending ways, and Quill is like, oh, this is the boyfriend, and Gamora tells him to kill her because he promised, and Quill can't bring himself to do it. Gamora says she loves him and to do it, but by the time he's, like, in all the time he spent debating whether to shoot or not, Thanos has used the reality stone to basically bubbles instead of a phaser. So point number two of people that are responsible for this, Peter Quill. And this will come up more than once, because if Peter, like, I get Peter here, I do. But if he hadn't killed Gamora like he should have, then there is no way Thanos could have found Vormir and the Soul Stone. So Peter Quill goes on the shit list.
All right, he's on the list.
All right. So let's see. So Thanos leaves with Gamora. The Avengers arrive at the compound, and by Avengers I mean Steve, Nat, Sam, Vision, and Wanda. It's funny because as they arrive, Rhodey's actually talking to Ross about Vision being missing. And Ross is more concerned about a stolen Quinjet and the four most wanted criminals than about, like, literally the fate of the universe. So screw you, Ross. Basically, Rhodes calls Ross out, but like, no, this is more because you made them criminals and you choose to call them that. And Ross is like, are you having second thoughts? Blah, blah, blah. And Rhodey basically does. And he's like, bye. And Ross is canceled. So they arrive, and like Ross, Ross does see Steve, and everybody's like, oh, Captain. He's like, are you here asking? He's like, I'm not asking permission, and I'm not asking for forgiveness, so just deal with it. Steve Rogers standing up to government entities is what I love the best. So everyone is happy that Banner's back. There's a very awkward Bruce and Nat moment, and even Sam is like, this is awkward, and I'm very glad for that scene because it is awkward. Bruce gets caught up, and I love the moment where he's like, well, where's Clint? And Nat's like, well, Clint and Scott took a deal. They're like, they were on house arrest, love the Accords, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, wait, who's Scott? Oh, Ant-Man. And Bruce is like, wait, there's an Ant-Man and a Spider-Man? Like, It's funny. I appreciate it. A lot's happened in 2 years, Brucey. So they realize that Vision says that they need to destroy the Mind Stone and thereby destroying him. But they said the only person that can the only person really with the power to destroy it is Wanda. And Wanda's just not down for that. And I get a lot of people shitting on Wanda for this, but I don't, because, like, look at this poor girl. She lost her parents to what I think was actually sort of, like, low-key revealed to be a Hydra attack or Stark weapons, right? She lost her brother to Ultron, and she nearly, like, she lost her life almost herself when she got sent to a psychotic prison where they put her in a freaking straitjacket. And now she's about to lose the only person that she's genuinely, like, loves in a romantic way. Like, this poor girl has lost enough. Stop hating on her. Everyone basically talks Vision out of it. Like, don't worry, we'll figure this out. But it's Steve that says that they're not in, like, sacrificing, like, lives and everything. So Steve technically belongs on this list, but since it's a shit list, I'm not putting my husband on the list. He doesn't deserve it. He'll deserve it in Endgame.
All right, he's still going on the list.
Fine, put him on the list.
I'm just messing with you.
I mean, he does kind of, like, there's a, like I said, there's a lot of people that belong on this list, whether intentionally or not, that are responsible for this for various reasons. Like, this is not one person's blame.
Well, I mean, and the thing is that I don't think you can really put him on the list for this one, because it's like, no, if we can do this in an alternative way that doesn't kill Vision, let's go for it. So in a way, you can't put him on the list of, like, oh, this is why this happened. This is your fault.
Thank you, like, for defending my husband. I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, you also got to use common sense at the same time, too. But we also know that common sense is a superpower nowadays.
But no, you're right. They are looking for an alternative, because Vision is a person. And he is a very powerful person in his own right. And he would be great to be used against Thanos himself. We just have to separate it from the Mind Stone. So where should they go? I just don't know where they could possibly go. But anyway,
the Batcave.
So in Wakanda, we see Bucky. He is referred to as the White Wolf. And he, oh my God, this poor baby. They just T'Challa basically just, like, shows up, and he opens the case, and there's the new arm. He's like, where's the fight? Like, this poor baby needs a vacation and a retirement package and someone to give him a hug, okay? But meanwhile, Doctor Strange is being tortured on the ship, and Peter is actually useful. Peter is a useful character. He comes up with the idea from aliens to, like, make a hole and push, you know, Squidward out. And they do. And we know that, yeah, so they save Doctor Strange. Clokey is always helpful and saves Doctor Strange. Oh, this is very important. So when Squidward gets thrown out of the airlock, so does Strange. And he just kind of flies out too. And then Clokey gets him, and then Peter tries to get them. Peter has legs. And I don't mean his human legs, I mean from the armor. This is ironically a nod to the Civil War comic, where Peter gets a fancy new reddish gold suit with these, like, cool spider-esque legs, but there's only three of them for some reason. I guess Tony only had room for three. And they are useful, but it's an interesting nod back to the comics. So I don't hate the suit here as much as I did in the comics, so I appreciate it. Also, I was going to say this. Tony needs to stop acting like Peter's dad. He is not Peter's dad. Peter does not need a dad. He had a dad. His name was Uncle Ben. Like, stop. Peter and, like, old movie references is really funny. So Doctor Strange is aware of Tony's arrogance. They have this cute moment between Strange and Peter, like, actually introduce themselves to each other. The time stone is mentioned, the stakes are pretty high, and they're kind of debating, like, should they turn around and go home, but they decide to go to Thanos. So we know Squidward tells them that they're going to Titan. Problem number two here. They actually have a couple of options. They can go to Titan and, you know, face Thanos with before he has all of the Infinity Stones. But Strange actually suggests going to Earth. And could Strange have Sling bring them back, or is that too far a distance?
I don't think so, especially with what we ended up seeing in Endgame.
You're right. Yeah. So it's weird. I don't know. That one's a little weird for me. But anyway, so they decide to go to Titan and stop Thanos before he gets all the Infinity Stones. Probably should have left the Time Stone with Wong. Just saying.
Yeah, but then
the thing that happens with Strange wouldn't have happened. I got it. I know.
Well, no, I was going to say that, so, no, what would have happened is that then you would have had another attack on New York. Because then Thanos would just gone to New York.
That's true. So, but, I mean, either way, he gets the stone, so I guess where he gets it doesn't really matter as much.
Yeah.
So Strange really is the adult in the room. But anyway, so Strange will save the Time Stone because the universe, and he's willing to sacrifice anybody to do it. Peter gets promoted to an Avenger. Like, oh my gosh, if Tony hadn't done it, we never would have known. Thanos is kind of running out of children. Not gonna lie, I don't care. But Thanos brings Gamora some food, and Thanos hopes that Gamora would be his replacement, and he thinks he, like, saved Gamora. He has a very twisted version of morality here. Gamora's like, we were happy on her planet. He's like, oh, people were on the brink of starvation. Now it's, like, a paradise, and children don't go to bed hungry or whatever. Like, okay, I'm sure you think that, but is it true? Thanos has to get Gamora to cooperate, and she says she doesn't know, and like she lies, and Thanos knows that she's lying, so he uses Nebula as leverage. So we know at the end of Guardians 2 that Nebula was going to go after Thanos and kill him. Clearly that did not work out for her, as she's in like pieces. Through Nebula's like lens history archive, because she's mostly a robot now, we find out that Gamora does know where the stone is, and she tells Thanos that it's on a planet called Vormir. So we find out that Thor speaks Groot. Apparently Groot was an elective offered to children in Asgard. Very nice. It's kind of cool that it's kind of its own language, but I also kind of like the idea that Groot is like on a different frequency, so maybe it's a combination of the two. I don't know. We don't know what the tree language like actually sounds like beyond the I and am and Groot.
And the occasional so, we.
Yes, the one we. So Rocket tries to be a captain and talk to Thor about, Thor's not okay. Like, he's really not. He lost Heimdall. He lost his entire family at this point. His mom died in Dark World. His dad died in Ragnarok. Loki's dead now for realsies this time.
Heimdall's gone.
And all his friends were killed by his psychotic sister. So
Except for Lady Sif, who is confirmed is still alive for all of this.
I really hope we see her one day. I want her to come back.
Like, I know the reason she didn't come back, that Jamie Alexander, the actress who plays Lady Sif, didn't come back, was apparently it was a scheduling conflict for the show that she was on that she also got hurt and needed surgery for.
Yep.
So
I hope we'll see her in like Thor Love and Thunder or something. Like, I want her back. There's a lot of potential.
I hope she does come back in Thor Love and Thunder, because I think if you're going to, especially with the new rumor now that could be Hemsworth's last film officially, because that just came out in the last week or two. That would be a great way to kind of wrap up his character by also having Lady Sif in the film in some form or fashion.
It would be nice to see, like, okay, I don't like this whole thing where, like, characters either have to die to retire or they have to do stupid time travel shenanigans. I'm looking at you, Steve Rogers. I know this whole thing, like, I know, like, there's always going to be fanboys like, oh, well, why didn't Thor come out for this battle or whatnot? But, like, let characters retire and be happy. So this is my solution, as much as I hate to say this. Let Jane be Thor, and yes, I feel nauseous just saying it, and have Thor and Sif get married and fly back to, a new Asgard somewhere, like, off-planet. Like, hey, I'd be okay with that.
Who knows? Maybe that's what they do.
That would be nice, but I never get the thing. I very rarely get the things I want in the MCU, so we'll see.
Well, also, keep in mind, because this was also put out about Thor Love and War, or Love and Thunder. Valkyrie is going to be looking for her queen.
Yes. So cool. She can get with Jane and they can leave me alone. Okay. So Rocket gives Thor an eye. I don't know. I kind of like the eye patch. Not going to lie. But all right. So he has a second eye.
But I also just kind of like Rocket coming up with these random body
parts?
Organs just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you might want to wash that before you put that in there.
Yeah. So they get to what is Nidavellir, and it's all darky and depressing, and we see Peter Dinklage, and funny enough, I remember this because when Peter Dinklage, there were like rumors that Peter Dinklage was going to be in the movie, then they were confirmed, and everybody's like, well, Peter Dinklage, who are you going to play? And he's like, oh, don't worry, you can't miss me. And to be honest, you really cannot miss him. He's a giant dwarf. Like, that was awesome. So we learned that the reason that this factory of dwarves that harness the power of a dying star is so desolate is because Thanos killed them all, except for him, because he made the gauntlet.
And he let him keep his hands, but he couldn't keep his hands.
Yeah, but I guess my question is when exactly did this happen?
This,
which also begs the question, I know that it's possible that Thanos knew he couldn't actually go to Asgard without getting his butt whooped, so maybe the gauntlet that was in Asgard was not a fake after all.
Potentially, because, like, here's the thing, he probably had to have done that before the events of, if I remember right, Ultron, because at the end of Ultron, that's when we actually see him go for the gauntlet and put it on.
Yes.
So it has to. So him doing this attack on this planet had to have happened before the events of Age of Ultron, because he had it sitting in, like, essentially, like,
one of those
security chests in the wall, you know.
Unless he, like, realized that the gauntlet he had wasn't enough. But anyway, so poor Peter Dinklage's character, I think his name is, like, Elixir or something like that. He gets his hands, like, fused. But anyway, there's a Chitauri soldier who's putting Nebula back together again. She's Humpty Dumpty. And she kills him and contacts Mantis to tell her to meet me on Titan. Okay, so here's a ship for you. Nebula and Mantis. That would be cool. Anyway, but I know Mantis has, like, a future love-ish interest. Anyway, so Strange and everybody arrives on Titan. They kind of break the ship on landing, and Strange protects them with his powers. So there's a fight between the Guardians who have just arrived and our Earthlings. There's a great moment when Peter, where he's like, hey, wait, you're from Earth? And Peter's like, I'm not from Earth, I'm from Michigan. And Tony's like, that's on Earth, you moron.
Kansas. It wasn't Michigan, it was Kansas.
Missouri.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway. So Peter's there to kill Thanos, and they know, they mention the Avengers, and that's what tells, and then it's like, Mantis is like, oh, we heard about you from Thor. It's like, oh, you know, Thor. So they know each other now. So, Peter Dinklage's character talks about Stormbreaker, which is like this fancy weapon that but they need to awaken the heart of the dying star. Meanwhile, Quill and Peter bond over 80s movie references. It's like, we tell him about the dance to save the universe. He goes, and Peter's like, oh, like in Footloose? It's like, and Peter's like, is that still the greatest movie ever made? And Parker's like, it never was. So Doctor Strange uses the time stone to see through like 5.6 million different realities or whatever.
No, it was
different realities and alternative futures.
He looked at 14,601 of them, I guess.
Whatever.
Massive number.
The exact numbers don't matter, but.
What is this? A game of whose lines it anyways, where the numbers don't matter? You've never watched Whose Line, has you?
The numbers really don't matter. Point is, yes, I have. So the point being that there's a bunch of these different realities and they don't really, like, but Tony asks them, how many do we win in? And it's only one. I find it statistically very unlikely that it would only be one. There's, like, way too many things going on that I'm going to have to ask Dr. Strange to check again. Anyway, so back on Vormir, it's like a purplish sandy planet, and there's a creepy dude who kind of knows everybody, and surprise, it's the Red Skull. He's sort of alive. Watching him be bitter about it is hilarious, not gonna lie. So let's see, he has a German accent. Anyway, so the Skull is now the keeper of the treasure that he cannot possess because he's a loser who wanted the stone. That happened. And this is his punishment from the universe. Sometimes the universe gives people exactly what they deserve. This is exactly what a Red Skull-covered Nazi deserves. So they go to this, like, pit, and the Red Skull explains that, like, it's not just... you get it and you can have it. It's a soul for a soul. You have to sacrifice this thing you care about the most. And Gamora kind of starts laughing, like, oh, you finally get exactly what you deserve because you don't love anything. And Gamora gets a real surprise that, as it turns out, that Thanos did actually love her as a father. He had a really poor way of showing it. He, I think, definitely deserves to be on the list of worst parents. Right next to Peter's dad. There you go. Let's see. So Gamora is sacrificed for the Soul Stone. Meanwhile, the Avengers arrive on Wakanda. And there's a funny moment where Banner talks to Rhodey and he's like, should I bow? And Rhodey's like, well, he's a king. And so Bruce tries to bow. And T'Challa's like, no, we don't do that here. And like, I like the twist on the monarchy, the way they did it in Wakanda, because it's like an informal monarchy. Like, yes, he's the king. Yes, there's a certain level of respect, but it's not a, oh, bowing, your highness, European BS. Let's see. So Bucky is there. He's semi-stable and 100 years old, and we're very proud of him. But they're ready for the end of the world. So the plan is that Shuri is going to try to remove all of the parts of the Soul Stone from the Vision to save the Vision. But something, meanwhile, has arrived. So remember how I said I had a list of things that should have been addressed in Endgame?
Yeah.
This is on the list. Because, like... I think it would have been interesting to actually have seen what Vision could have done without the Soul Stone, the Mind Stone. I think it was kind of a waste to just kill Vision right then and there. And obviously he dies later in the film, but it's still like, this would have been an interesting element to use in Endgame. That like they go back in time and like, because otherwise all of the things that Shuri does were a waste of time. And that could have been spent on, like, literally doing anything else. Gathering additional weapons, giving some of, like, Bucky something better than just a machine gun. Like, to me, I feel like Vision deserved better. So does Wakanda, but we'll get to that. Let's see, where was I? So outside the, so we know that Wakanda is covered in like a dome thingy. And these Thanos's creepy children arrive, and there's like spaceships coming down. And Vision, it tries to be self-sacrificing again, but Cap's, but they're like, no, we'll take care of you, don't worry. And Wanda's there because as soon as Shuri finishes the thing she's supposed to do, Wanda's supposed to destroy the stone. And then, and I like the line that T'Challa says, and give this man a shield. So Thor activates the Dying Star. It holds the eye open to get his to make the axe. Meanwhile, Banner gets the Hulkbuster armor. That's important. There's a certain irony there. We also see that not only is the Dora Milaje and the Border Tribe, but M'Baku and the Mountain People are also there to fight. And I think, I really hope that they continue this relationship between M'Baku and T'Challa as like these like friends of different peoples. Like, I like that. I want to see more of that.
Well, and they do, because the thing is that like you see a moment where M'Baku and his tribe shows up, yeah. And then you see T'Challa thank M'Baku for coming, and he says, of course, brother.
Yeah, so I hope we see more of that, I mean, in, like, future movies. So.
Just keep Beyonce away from Black Panther 2.
Please, for the love of Kirby, please. Please.
She can't act.
And if she plays Storm, I might just rage quit this. Like, she's not, no. Like, she couldn't even do a freaking voice role. Come on. Let her stay in her, you know, pop diva. I don't even know what genre she qualifies under. I don't listen to her music. Whatever. So, seriously, no. No Beyonce in Black Panther. No. Unless she's, like, a pop star and she just plays herself.
That wouldn't even be hard for her to do. She can't act, but
she can be like, she can be a cameo, but I heard somebody saying that she's playing Storm and just
I'm sorry, but there's only one Storm and that's Halle Berry.
No, you can recast her. Sorry, Halle Berry, but like they're going to recast her anyway.
Oh, I know that, but you know what I mean though.
Yeah, I really liked, we can do a separate episode of this, but I like the kid they got to play her in the X-Men films, in the other X-Men films, but they'll probably just recast somebody completely new.
Well, anyway. No, that's the thing, because we've already heard that when it comes to X-Men, the only person that's staying on as their actual character is Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, because Deadpool is considered part of the whole X-Men universe.
That's right. I keep forgetting about Deadpool. Anyway. So they release a creepy bloodhounds and they start breaking through the shield, but then they get torn apart and everything. But we also see them like this. Oh, there's an important moment before this where Steve and Nat and I think Sam too kind of go up to the, oh, and Bucky. They go up to like the borders of the shield and Proxima. And she's like, oh, you're all about to die. And like, oh no, it was Sam. Bucky wasn't there. Because when he comes back, Bucky's like, so did they surrender? And Steve's like, not exactly. So there's these like creepy bloodhound dog army things. And some of them get sliced by the shield, which was great. But they notice that like they're circling around the shield. And they don't want that. Because then there's too many vantage points. So they drop part of the shield. So it's a pretty epic fight, and Shuri's obviously running out of time. Thor prays for strength from the All Fathers and holds the thing open. It should be noted that our friend the dwarf says that sorry, might be some background noise on my end, but there is an important thing to note where he talks about Stormbreaker as they like this godlike weapon that is so powerful it could even summon the Bifrost. That'll be important.
Like right now.
So what's really cool is like this, they make the thing, but the handle is somewhere else. So our friend, the dwarf goes to find it, but Groot ends up making the handle for the axe himself. It looks pretty cool. The wolf dog things are very creepy, by the way. So this is cool. So as this battle's going on, as Vision is like in big trouble, and Thor just kind of lands in like the Bifrost, through the Bifrost, with like a rat on one side and a tree on the other.
With a rat on his shoulder and the tree on the other side.
Yeah, pretty much. So Thanos, meanwhile, arrives on Titan, and Strange poses a distraction. He's very logical. Thanos offers mercy. And he talks about how he's going to retire after he's done his deed and, like, watch the sunrise on a grateful universe. I'm like, bitch, the universe ain't going to be grateful. So then there's a fight. The cloak is still awesome. We stand Clokey. Peter gets hurt. Clokey gets ripped. They managed to put up a decent-ish fight, but they're really no match for Thanos and three Infinity Stones. Let's see. So they grab him, but can they hold him? So the plan is actually brilliant. They have him trapped. Mantis is on his head trying to like keep him in like that mental state so that they can rip the gauntlet off. But then Peter goes off. He finds out that Gamora, because Nebula shows up and they find out that Gamora is dead, and Peter goes apeshit. Peter, this is why you're on the list.
Twice.
Like he should be on this list twice, because I get it. The woman you love, the only person who's been your family, blah, 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 dies. Like, it's an emotional reaction. I get that. But because of that, like, Mantis ended up getting knocked off, and they couldn't get the gauntlet off, and yeah.
And the gauntlet was, like, literally...
It was coming off!
It was on the fingertips of Thanos.
They were could have gotten it off! Peter is such a treasure. He just like webs everybody and like saves Mantis and saves everyone from falling, and he's great. So like I said, Shuri isn't working fast enough. One of the bad guys like arrives and like rips through the defenses.
But that's because Wanda had left at that point to go down onto the field.
Although we haven't gotten there. No, doesn't Wanda get knocked out, or is that Vision?
No. So what happens is that Wanda goes down onto the field because the Thanos' army brings up those like large metal wheels of death stuff that comes from underground. And she goes,
No. It's like right after this. I'm getting to that. Yeah. So Rocket and Bucky shooting things, and there's a cool moment where like Bucky picks Rocket up and they start shooting, and he's like, "How much for the arm?" And Bucky just looks at him like, and Rocket's like, "I'm gonna get that arm." We were all hoping for some kind of arm reference between Rocket and Bucky, and what we got was great. So Thor and Steve have a little ad-libbed moment about the beards. It's like, "Oh, I see you cut your hair. I see you've copied my beard." Like, and says, "This is my friend Tree." And the tree is like, "I am Groot." And Steve goes, "I am Steve Rogers." it's so funny. And like, this movie, generally speaking, is very serious. So these moments of levity are much appreciated.
Especially when you're in a fight.
Yeah, there's also a really nice team up between Sam and Rhodey. Okoye and Nat are doing a really good job. And then Wanda shows up and like she stops these like ripper things that are flying, just like pushes through with her powers. Like Wanda is so powerful. I love it. And they're like, and Okoye's impression is like, why hasn't she been like here the entire time? Which is a valid point. But they thought they would have more time. And the point was that, like, she had to be there as soon as Shuri detached Vision from the stone so Wanda could destroy it. So then Wanda gets hurt by Proxima, but she's like, "You'll die alone." And Nat's like, "But she's not alone." And, I love this fight. It's really, really good. Let's see. Banner and Hulk still disagree. Hulk will have a lot, and he has a line that says, "Hulk, we have a lot to figure out." So I'm guessing in between Infinity War and Endgame, they clearly figure it out to a degree.
Well, they do, and they explain it.
Yeah. So Steve comes to, Vision gets, like, thrown out the window, basically. And he comes to Vision's rescue. Wanda, so part of the reason Wanda gets hurt is because they Vision like lets them know that they like Vision's in trouble, and she's about to go, but then Proxima hits her. But Steve comes to Vision's rescue. Wanda saves Nat, and then Vision saves Steve after Steve told him to run. Back on Titan, Peter Parker saves everyone. Strange and Thanos fight. There's a good use of magic, and Strange doesn't use the stone. Which, like, I, on the one hand, I guess he could have used it, but to do what other than to, like, it's a time stone. Like, he can reverse time and take a punch in a different way, but I mean, maybe if he rewound it to the part before Peter goes Coco on Thanos, that would have helped. So let's see, where was I? So basically, Tony is the final person to go up against Thanos. Thanos basically destroys his armor, but he has respect for him. And Strange gives him the stone in exchange for Tony's life, and he kind of gives them this hint, like, there's only one, no tricks to, so Quill still tries to fight Thanos, and of course he has no chance. And Strange says, we're in the end game now. We know now that this is the reference to the title of the next Avengers movie, which is Avengers Endgame. Thor is kicking a lot of butt. Like, Stormbreaker is a pretty badass weapon. Wanda finds Vision, but Thanos has arrived. And he just decimates everybody. Like, he walks through everyone like they weren't even there. Vision tells Wanda that it's time. This scene is so heartbreaking. Because Wanda doesn't want to, like, Wanda has lost literally everyone she's ever loved. And this is just, like, you see that, like, on her face. And it's just like, it's okay, I only feel you. And the way that she destroys the stone is she just destroys everything. Vision's body, all of it. But the thing is as she's destroying it, Thanos is right there. And she manages to hold off Thanos while also destroying the Vision. This is very important because Wanda is amazing. And I think at some point Vision tells Wanda that he loves her. Wanda holds off Thanos while destroying the stone. Vision dies, but Thanos is kind of sympathetic, but it like I'll give him credit. He does try to sympathize with her, but then he reverses time and literally rips a part of Vision's head off. And that's it. Thanos wins, everybody. So Thor, okay. Thor is on the list because AIM. Here's why. Thor throws Stormbreaker at Thanos' chest. Where should he have been aiming for?
The chest. Right for
no,
the heart.
He aims for the chest. No. The head, like Thanos suggests, or the arm. Think about it. Those are the only two things he should have aimed for, but no, he aims for the chest. Huh. So Thanos puts the soul, Thanos snaps his fingers and we go into the soul stone. Inside the soul stone, we see young Gamora and she's like, so you did it. And he's like, yes, I did it. But what did it cost? And Thanos says everything.
The memes to this is amazing.
And so people begin to turn to dust. The most heartbreaking, so there's two, I think, very heartbreaking moments here. One is Wanda, because you just like see like the way that she does it, she's almost like leaning into the dust because she's just like done. And two, Peter Parker, not Quill. It was confirmed that because of Peter's spidey sense, he sensed what was happening to him. And that just makes this so, so much more painful. Like, this is, oh my God, this child.
Well, no, I would throw in the Rocket Groot one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because when Groot says, I am Groot to Rocket, he's actually saying, I love you, Dad.
That's true. It's still a little weird, but yeah, that's fair. That one's also, that's a parent-child dynamic I am okay with.
Well, also keep in mind that that's the whole story of Guardians that James Gunn has been working on, and we're going to see it come full circle in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 when they finally get to do that.
So on, as far as Titan is concerned, the only people that do not get dusted are Tony and Nebula. Thanos gets his sunset, but you actually do see like his arm being like significantly damaged. You just see the top of it, but you do see the damage. So who's left alive? Okoye is left alive, and the original Avengers. Plus Rhodey. Did I miss anybody? Oh, and Rocket.
Yeah, Rocket's still there. I think that's it. Yeah.
So, after credit scene, it's New York. And Maria and Fury, or is it Maria and Fury? Anyway, Maria and Fury are in a car when there's like a car crash. And they said, Maria says something about bogeys on Wakanda. Call control, code red, and there's also something about a guy named Klein that they were going to contact before all this happens. Before anything can happen, Maria gets dusted, and before Fury gets dusted, and he's about to drop an MF bomb, he also gets dusted, but he manages to activate the mother of all ancient technologies, a freaking beeper. And we see that it's sending, and then we see the Captain Marvel, like, logo. So we know that this is setting up Carol. So, there was a lot of things that I kind of wished had been developed a little bit better as we went into Endgame. One is whole the Vision and Shuri thing. I know this whole thing about like, oh, the deaths are permanent this time, but I don't know. It felt like they should have, like, arguably they should have like gone back in time and to that battle. And at the very, like, there's things that could have gone differently. I think that would have been a little bit of a more interesting element with the time travel than what they ended up doing in Endgame. So with that being said, I have a note here that says Tony didn't care about Vision, but I don't remember why I wrote it. But oh well. And there's also a nod, the Bruce falling in through the Sanctum Sanctorum is actually a nod to the Infinity Gauntlet number one, where it's the Silver Surfer that actually crashes in the Sanctum. But some things that people also speculated that should have been in Endgame that doesn't was like the depths of the Soul Stone. And there's a lot of fan theories that like everybody's just trapped in the Soul Stone or whatever. Obviously we didn't get that. I really wish we could have had a little bit more of like that stuff. I think that would have been a lot cooler in some ways.
Let's be brutally honest. If we actually, one, it wasn't going to work for the film.
No, I don't think it would have worked.
But number two, it would just be everyone just kicking the living shit out of Quill.
I don't see the downside.
So, because it'd be like, you should have just let them take the gauntlet, you stupid bastard.
So, like, in terms of responsibility, you can blame Peter, you can blame Loki and Thor. Loki for taking the freaking Tesseract when he should have freaking left it to be destroyed on Asgard. And Peter for screwing up with Thanos twice. Not once, twice. So the funny thing is I hadn't rewatched it from the very beginning in a pretty long time. So it was nice to revisit everything. All of the dialogue between Tony and Strange at the beginning was really fun. Wong could not go with them because somebody always has to protect the Sanctum. I like the magic of Doctor Strange, and it's very clear that, like, some time has passed since the Doctor Strange movie, and he's gotten a lot stronger and better with his spells, because he does a lot of really cool stuff. Thanos' children are all forgettable and pointless.
No, I would say Ebony Maw was the more impact making of the four.
Squidward. I'd argue Squidward and Proxima. We'll give them credit.
But I think that's also because they're the two major ones talking. I mean, Call Obsidian was the one who did. Because Call Obsidian was the one who actually did wound, you know, Vision in the very beginning, and was the one that almost took out Vision and took the Mind Stone, you know, right off the bat. So Call Obsidian was actually pretty powerful within himself. Proxima Midnight was obviously a like actual general that was important. Yeah. And then Ebony Maw was literally the right hand to Thanos, and then you had Corvius Glaive, which was the big guy, which he's the one you can kind of forget. I mean,
point being that like not all of Thanos' children are created equal. It's very clear that there are children that he favored, like Nebula slightly and mainly Gamora, and then there's the ones that are basically just there to like do his bidding, and like he doesn't really care if they live or die.
Well, keep in mind, when Thanos got the Titan to face and went face to face and had that conversation with Strange before they went into that huge fight scene, he noted that Ebony Maw, you know, obviously wasn't there. He was dead. And that was a heavy burden for Thanos to take, because to him, Ebony Maw was an important person to Thanos.
Thanos is an interesting character as a bad guy, because it's very clear that he has his own sense of morality. And his plan is batshit and completely ridiculous and stupid, but he thinks, but this is the problem with bad guys, they think they're in the right. And this is exactly the kind of bad guy that Thanos is. He thinks that he's saving the universe. We find out that this is not the case for obvious reasons as we get into Endgame, but it still holds up as a film. I enjoyed it. This movie did a lot of things really well. I like the way that the colors changed so that sometimes the setting you were matched in Infinity Stone. Like when we first see the Guardians, there's like a purple element because of Xandar and the Power Stone. So there's obvious elements of green when we meet Doctor Strange. Like that part was really good. I like the use of color. I know a lot of people like to hate on Wanda. I will defend Wanda. I really like her here. I think that we see a lot of the development of her powers, because unfortunately she's not a main character, so there's a lot that we miss in her development. And I really I hope we will get some flashbacks in WandaVision to the in-between time of like these stolen moments that Wanda and Vision had. Because like I want to know what this moment was where they actually were like, huh, maybe we should see if this is like an actual relationship we can have, even though you're technically not human, even though we know Vision is capable of human things. He feels, he has emotions, he falls in love.
So, you ready for this? Approximate screen time for each major character. Ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
Thanos, 29 minutes.
It's like Thanos is the top one.
Yeah, Thanos is 29 minutes. Gamora is 19 minutes, 30 seconds. Tony Stark, Iron Man's 18 minutes. Thor is 14 minutes, 30 seconds. Doctor Strange, 11 minutes, 30 seconds. Star-Lord, 10 minutes, 15 seconds. Vision, 9 minutes, 45 seconds. Wanda, 9 minutes even. Bruce Banner, 8 minutes 45 seconds. Peter Parker, 7 minutes 30 seconds. Captain America had 6 minutes and 45 seconds of screen time. Rocket had 6 minutes. Black Widow had 5 minutes. Drax and Mantis both had 4 minutes and 45 seconds. And then, you know, it just gets less and less and less as we go down. Loki had 3 minutes and 15 seconds, just the beginning of the movie alone.
Good for him. Good for him.
So, but yeah, like Ned had 15 seconds of screen time and the Collector had 45 seconds of screen time. So that was some of your bigger ones. Like the fact that and that was something that a lot of people complained about. It was like, oh, why don't we see more of Captain America? Why didn't we see more of Thor? Like, well, Thor, you actually got a healthy amount of
Thor had
to create his story going into Endgame. Now, and one
not
of the,
only that, Thor actually had an arc in this film. He had a journey.
Yeah, he has an arc in not just this film, but that goes also into Endgame as well. Yes. Now, Steve Rogers, everyone was going, oh, well, Steve only got like 6 minutes and 45 seconds. That's because Steve wasn't the focus of this one. The bigger focus of this one was obviously Steve Strange establishing Thanos, Iron Man, and Thor. Those were the key focuses of this film. And then the next film, Steve Rogers has more screen time because he's more of a major focus along with Thor and Iron Man. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, yeah, you got to remember, this is a part one of a two-part film.
Well, it's not actually.
Technically speaking, it was, because originally it was billed as Infinity War part one and part two.
True, but that was very quickly changed to Infinity War and Endgame. But I think
they still considered it a two-part film.
No, they didn't. They didn't. Feige actually, I have a note here about that from Feige. Let me find it. That actually contradicts this. But
well, tell that to the Russos, because when they filmed it all together at the same time, there's like, we're considering this one big film with two parts.
Producer Kevin Feige said that the Infinity films were subtitled part one and part two because they have such shared elements, blah, 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 but I wouldn't call it one story that's cut in half. I would say it's going into two distinct movies. In May 2016, the Russos revealed that they would retitle the two films to further remove the misconception that they were the large film split in two. So I think this would have actually worked better if what you said was actually true, if this was really a part one and part two. I think it would have been easier to blend the elements a little bit better. And like, I'm still mad they killed Vision, okay? I'm mad about it. Wanda needs happiness. And I don't know in what way he's coming back. Whatever way that the Vision comes back in WandaVision, I hope he sticks around. Because there was so much still left with Paul Bettany. I want to see more of Paul Bettany. He does such a great job with this character, and I want to see more of that.
And to imagine, before the first Iron Man movie, when he got the role of Jarvis, he was actually told that his career was over.
Yep.
And I've seen him in other films before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he's a great actor.
He's a fantastic actor. So I don't understand. I think the first film I actually saw him in was like The Da Vinci Code.
First movie I saw him in was A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger.
Right. Oh, I saw that movie once like a century ago. But you know, he's an amazing actor, and he seemed to enjoy being the character, and I don't want that to be wasted. I don't know what the Marvel Universe has planned. There's too many secrets. I do think that Marvel can peel back the secrecy a little bit. I think it's okay if people guess what happens. It doesn't mean that they won't go see the film. I think it's okay to not keep us in the complete dark. But that being said, I don't want to see clips of the movie before they come out. Like, don't do that. But you can release like a trailer, and like, if people guess, like, you don't have to respond. You can just ignore things. Like, that's okay. I enjoyed this film. I think it's really it is serious. And just like Endgame, like, there are places where you need humor in order to be able to, I think, handle it. And I think one of the reasons why I don't enjoy a lot of the darker, like, comic book films is because they're usually too dark. And I don't mind a certain level of darkness, but I think you need some levity in there. But that's a separate universe. That's a separate conversation. So I enjoyed the little bits of humor, and they still hold up. They still got a chuckle out of me. I like Doctor Strange being the adult in the room. I liked his logic, and I like the contradiction between him and Tony, particularly because they started out very in similar places. They were both hoity-toity, and they were arrogant, and they were full of themselves. And in a lot of ways, Tony is still that. That's something that I think he as a character works on. And I think that's something that he acknowledges, but he still comes off as very arrogant and self-righteous. In some ways, more than Steve. But you see how Doctor Strange is more humble, and he's been humbled by everything he's been through, and he's taken on that responsibility a little bit to the point of extreme, I think, but he takes it very seriously, and it's really important. So this movie left people in a very sad mood. I think I actually have a photo that I took with a friend of mine as we got into the car after seeing this movie, and we both just had this look on our face like, oh God, what did we walk into? And I do wish that some of these elements would have been utilized in Endgame, like Shuri, like the Vision and separating from the Mind Stone, because that seemed like such an important plot point that just went nowhere. And I will forever be angry about it. With that, Michael, tell us how amazing is this movie, really?
So this Avengers Infinity War clocked in at 2 hours and 29 minutes with a score of an 8.5 out of 10. And don't worry, we're not going to make you wait a full year for an Endgame review or chat.
No, Lord, not.
That'll probably be happening in about 4 weeks. Because next week, we're going to be live on Twitch next Thursday doing the LGBT history and representation in Marvel.
That's right.
We'll explain why later as to why we're doing what we're going to be doing. Then after that, we'll be doing Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, and then, of course, Endgame, and then Far From Home.
So if anybody caught, so keep an eye out on, you know, the various channels, but this is going to be a lot of fun. If anybody saw the panel that Mike and I did for AwesomeCon a little while ago, this is going to be a little bit different in style. It's going to be a lot more fun, and it's going to be longer. So you get to see my beautiful face and hear all of my rantings live and in color.
It's going to be live. It's not going to be pre-recorded. I have work I have to do over the weekend to make sure that everything is going to work okay, especially for the PowerPoint presentation, because I've never put a PowerPoint presentation into OBS before.
We can always tweak the PowerPoint because it's a long-ass PowerPoint.
Well, it's either that or there's also something that I could probably just do. And yeah.
Well, Michael is brilliant. He will figure it out.
Sure, we'll go with that. But you could find me on the Twitters at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course on the website at txhdhockey.com, and for the show /nerdy-notions.
And as always, I am on Instagram as Geeky Captain and on Tumblr as geekgirl101.tumblr.com. You can submit questions ahead of time, but honestly, submit them live. It's way more fun. And with that, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time live.
On Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75.